Hello and welcome to the D.
An A of Home Interiors, the podcast which is all about empowering you to make confident interior and furnishing decisions for your home. I'm Audrey, founder of Audrey Whelan Interior Design.
And I'm Deirdre, founder of youfurnish.com, search 100 plus furniture retailers on one website. The DNA of Home Interiors is proudly sponsored by checkatrade.com. If you need help with your next home improvement project, you can search from over 39,000 recommended, vetted, and monitored trades on checkatrade.com.
So today on the podcast, myself and Deirdre are absolutely delighted to be talking about swimming pools. We are joined by John Hall, who is the construction director at Jeffform Pools. John and I had the pleasure of crossing paths a few years ago when I was designing a swimming pool in the basement of a house on Barnet Road in London, and John was in charge of the construction. It was an absolutely amazing experience. You can see some photographs of the pool on my website under Barnet Road if you want to have a peek. So, John, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
So, John, I'm really intrigued. A lot of people have this dream of a swimming pool in their own home. What makes people make it a reality?
I think the primary question is what they want to use it for. So if it's going to be more for fitness, because they want to use it on a regular basis for fitness, or if it's for children to play, there's a host of different options for actually having a swimming pool in your home. The location of it is obviously a huge factor. If you've got space to have an indoor swimming pool, then it's a massive luxury, and obviously with that it becomes a much more multi-use space. It can be used as a gym area, or We've got clients that have asked us to actually go and experience a high-end London hotel, and with the brief of replicating that in their basement. So it's it's very much, I've had the pleasure a couple of times of actually going to a nice London spa, just simply to experience it, to try and replicate it. So I don't mind those days too much.
So for those people, it is literally, they want to use the pool, but they don't want to have to go outside of their home. They just want it in their home. Because I was thinking with some people, maybe there's a little bit of ego in there saying that I have a pool. Maybe it's like, you know, a trophy car that you have in your garage that you don't actually use that much. Or maybe it's a thing that it's going to add so much value to the property, as well as some of the other reasons. But is the primary reason actually mostly driven in your experience around people just wanting to use it?
I think so. If you've got the space available, there's almost a checklist of musts in certain properties, and that checklist includes cinema rooms, gyms, and quite high up that checklist, which people will strive for, is to have a swimming pool. And that opens up to the what we call the experiences around a swimming pool. So that's the saunas and steam rooms and spa areas. And if you've got the capacity, then people want to create that spa feeling in their own home. What's better, really?
Yeah, indeed. Wow. For those who are lucky enough. And it's my dream one day, John. So hopefully I'll be able to make it reality. I'll be calling you up. But you've mentioned space. And I suppose for folks that are living in a city, it must be really hard to have the space versus if you've got some land around your property. So where do you see most demand coming from? And I think in cities, I'm imagining, is it all basements, dugouts to put in pools, things like that? Or is it people that have big properties detached with some land that are actually building swimming pools?
There's a very defined line between the London basement swimming pools, which have become more and more popular over the last 15 years as technology's moved on with obviously the excavations that can be done. We've seen some amazing structural projects where they've actually undermined an existing property within a terrace, for example, and they've created a basement that's two stories deep below the ground, just to maximise the possible space, because the square footage is such a premium in the central London areas, all the way to the big country piles in the middle of Buckinghamshire that have got the space to not require the basement, and they can spread out, have an indoor pool at ground level. And then obviously the last sort of option is an outdoor pool, which are increasingly becoming popular. I think summers are getting a bit nicer and holidays are, obviously in the last 18 months, holidays have become a bit more difficult to come by. So we've actually seen a large increase in the outdoor swimming pool market, because it's an achievable luxury for a lot more people.
Wow. And what keeps you busy? What's the split between those three options?
I would say that it's probably 70% indoor pools, maybe 80% indoor pools to 20% outdoor pools. And that's just because of the market that we're in. I know that I've got friends in with different swimming pool companies that focus more on outdoor swimming pools, and they're saying that it's a different market, but they're absolutely, this year will be huge for them, because there's so many people that are not going on holiday, so they're investing their money on bringing a holiday to them.
And the 80% indoor, are they mainly the basement ones or the above ground ones?
They're mainly basements. So
mainly basements, wow.
Yeah. So I think most of the time we've probably got somewhere around the 20 projects on the go, at different stages through construction and design. And the majority of those are the London basement projects for the... we've got some architects that we do regular projects with. So we might have three or four projects on the go with one architect firm that obviously we have a rapport with, and we've got good working arrangement working on different projects. So
John, in terms of installing a pool, say in a basement, what would you say is the minimum space that you would need to have to be able to make that work?
The smallest usable pool would then require what we call a swim jet or a counter current. So we can actually maximise a relatively small area by putting in this counter current unit within a swimming pool. So if you think of it like a treadmill for swimming, we can get away with a 4 metre by 2 metre swimming pool. But because you're effectively stationary while swimming, you can have a meaningful swim in a relatively small space. So we fit a few of those in the central London sort of basements because space is such a premium. And if you was going to go for a traditional sort of size swimming pool, then we'd sort of say a minimum of sort of 8 metres long would still give you a reasonable swim. Where you can do lengths and you can actually do some exercise in it without feeling like you're spending more time turning and less time swimming.
Yeah.
But those countercurrent units are very useful in the right situation.
Yeah, I've never tried the countercurrent idea, but I've read all about it. And yeah, it does sound like a brilliant solution. If you can get away with 4 metres by two, that really opens up possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's obviously the first question again would be how good a swimmer are you? Because there's different powers of countercurrent. So we've got sort of options for a leisurely breaststroke, and then we've got countercurrents that a competitive swimmer can practice in. So the size. The amount of water that they need to turn over, it depends on how vigorous you want to swim, and then that will ultimately size the swimming pool, the minimum sizes.
Oh wow, so it's quite a science.
Yeah, a little bit. It's
Do you have to like put people into a pool and test them how good they are versus what they're actually saying?
Somewhere along the line, someone has done that. And we do. It's sometimes a bit of an odd question to ask a client of how good a swimmer are you? But obviously you get an idea of what they want from the swimming pool and their sort of aspirations. And we sort of try and tender it to that. And we've touch wood, not had too many complaints so far.
And would you see the countercurrents being a choice for outdoor pools as well? Or is that usually just indoors because space might be more limited?
No, we see them installed outdoors as well for the same reason. So people don't necessarily have big gardens. So if it's exercise that people want, then quite often that you'll find that they'll actually keep the pool a little bit smaller, which will keep the general running costs and the energy costs to a minimum. And then they can still use it for exercise. It's quite useful in that respect.
And on that subject of exercise, I'm curious to know, would a majority of customers be looking for pools in their home for exercise purposes, or are there quite a lot wanting them for just more relaxation, social kind of reasons?
I think more people want them for the relaxation, social reasons. I think a lot of our clients are obviously very successful business people, and they've got to the point where they are enjoying family time more, and a lot of the time they've maybe got grandkids that they want to encourage to swim, and we see that quite a lot. A lot of our clients have got their own children are sort of grown up to a point where they're actually looking more at the grandkids and spending some quality time and actually enjoying the space, where maybe 15 years ago when their kids were little, they were obviously focusing on their work and earning the money to afford the swimming pool. And then this is a very nice sort of situation for them to enjoy it with the next generation.
Oh, that's such a lovely idea, isn't it? Yeah, really makes sense as well.
So, John, you've talked about getting a swimming pool, what you're using it for, and therefore the size as well is going to be a factor of what you can do. But what are the key decision factors if I'm saying, right, I've got some money, I'm actually going to go ahead and build a pool? Apart from size, what are the two or three other factors? Obviously, cost will be one, but is there any other factors that you're sort of people really need to decide between?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first recommendation I would say is to find a swimming pool company that was actually associated with a trade association, so you've got that backup. There's a lot of, as with every industry, there's security to be had from looking within a organisation that has the client's interest at heart. If a client has a problem, or if the swimming pool contractor has a problem, then they're there as a mediator. Also, they have to come out and actually inspect our work on an annual basis. So we're obviously keeping up the quality that they expect for the industry. And they're being the industry regulators, their primary goal is to make sure that the industry is professional and that we represent them as well as representing ourselves in the best possible way. So looking on their website, it would be beneficial if you were looking for a swimming pool company to find one that was associated with Sparta. And then it would come, obviously budget comes into the equation. There are a number of different ways of actually building swimming pools, from fiberglass one-piece pools or that sort of drop in the ground and they're prefabricated and they serve a purpose in certain situations where you just want somewhere that you can quickly install a swimming pool and the client has a certain budget. And then the swimming pools that we install, we focus on concrete tiled pools because of the access and the basements where we work, to be able to form a bespoke swimming pool in situ is one of the main priorities And with that, obviously, you get the best finish that's available in a swimming pool of a tile, which would then give you longevity. So swimming pools that are tiled, we've obviously, they've been around for a long time now. And as a company, we're 30 years old next year, and the swimming pools that we built right at the start of that are still going absolutely strong now, and I've got no doubt and they'll be the same in another 30 years' time. So that's the probably the main consideration is how your swimming pool is constructed, really.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question, was around how long does a swimming pool last? So you're saying 30 years plus another 30. Is it a case that you need to do something with the lining or the tiles, or they should literally last for, you know, 50, 60 years?
We look after pools that are in certain sort of houses and hotels in London that were built way before we were incorporated, back in sort of the Second World War, and they've seen reincarnations through different situations, but they're still just as good now as they were back then. As with anything, it needs maintenance and it needs to be looked after, but the tiles being such a durable finish, as you know, you've got a tiled floor that could be down for hundreds of years, and it's just as stable now as it was back then, is the same with a tiled swimming pool. So obviously water is quite a aggressive substance, so if that water quality is maintained, there's no reason why that swimming pool shouldn't last for a long, long time. It's just obviously, as with anything, it just needs the correct maintenance.
Yeah, it's so interesting you were saying about fiberglass there, because I was curious to ask you, yeah, I mean, obviously we do all think of tiles first off, really, when we think of swimming pool cladding and finishes. But, you know, the example of fiberglass you gave, what would that actually look like then? Or would it be tiled subsequently? Or
The different budgets will give you a different finish, really. So there are... The easiest and the quickest and subsequently probably the most cost-effective swimming pools are a fiberglass shell. So the same GRP finish that you'd probably find in a lot of fiberglass bathtubs, you know, that smooth, painted look finish, but obviously it's not painted, it's a fiberglass finish. There are swimming pool companies of manufacturers that do a tiled version of a very similar product. They're quite common now, and they're a great product. And they've only been on the market for sort of the last 5 years, since adhesives and actual methods of attaching those tiles to the fiberglass pools has moved on. And then moving forward, there's fashions, as with everything, and the fashions have moved over the last 20 years quite dramatically, really. So from a concrete pool, if you was to go to most concrete pools that were built 20 or 30 years ago, because of the construction and maybe the tolerances that were achieved back then, the most common way of finishing them was with a marble type plaster. So what you'll see is tiles around the top, around waterline. So that can be kept clean, and obviously we call it a tile band. And then below the water would be like a plastered finish, which you'll notice on pools of that sort of generation. Then I'd say that there was a movement towards fully tiled mosaic pools, because the tolerances that were required to tile those were a bit tighter. It lent itself to a more premium product, because if someone saw a fully tiled pool, obviously the workmanship that went into that was higher, because obviously it was designed to be fully tiled. And now I think we're coming out the back of that now a little bit. So while mosaics are still, in my opinion, or in the industry's opinion, the best finish for a swimming pool, we're obviously seeing a few more pools that are going down the larger format tiled route, because as with anything, everyone would like to try something different, and the large tiles in the pool, they offer their own challenges from a construction point of view. But the second that you say something is more challenging, it makes them more appealing for certain
more exclusive
clients.
Yes.
Absolutely. So as you guys can imagine, the everyone wants the bigger and the better. So people are trying to stretch the limits of what they can get away with the finishes inside a swimming pool. So we're seeing a movement towards the large porcelain tiles, which I think looks stunning. Yes. But obviously there are drawbacks with that, as there are with everything else.
What are the drawbacks?
The drawbacks come from sort of installation, really. So if you can imagine with a large format tile in any other situation, if there's a very small void behind that tile, it doesn't really matter too much if it's in a shower or something, because there's no risk of that void really filling with water. But in a swimming pool, if there is a very, very small void that's created just from the adhesive being applied, or a bubble in the adhesive when it's actually installed, that can actually, water, if it can find its way in there, can then sort of manifest, and effectively it's not being chlorinated, it's in a warm environment, it can potentially turn nasty, for want of a better word, and bacteria can grow, and then that can actually come back out, and you can have an unhealthy swimming pool. So large format tiles, we have to have the understanding with the client that there is a possibility of this sort of risk. But a lot of the time, obviously, in a well-installed swimming pool, that risk can be managed to being very, very low. But it's a risk that is not present with mosaics, because it's not possible to get a void behind a mosaic because of the size of the tile. Obviously, it's just nowhere to put a void. So that's the main thing. So while they look very nice, we try and steer people towards mosaics, but it's not always possible.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, because the mosaics are so flexible, aren't they, on that kind of netting when you get them, so they can really adapt to the surface behind.
Absolutely.
Quick shout out for our sponsor, checkatrade.com. Search recommended tradespeople online at checkatrade.com.
Yeah, the other swimming pool finish I was curious to ask you about, John, was stainless steel, because I don't know if you've ever been to the Lido at Parliament Hill, Hampstead Heath, but that's one of my favourite swimming pools in London, particularly over the last few years, because they did upgrade it and completely refurbished it, and it's got a stainless steel lining. It's actually the only time I've ever seen or swam in a stainless steel pool. So is this something really, really unique, or is this something you've seen other people talk about or want?
It's not unique. I am familiar with that pool, and it is lovely. And there's a few hotels in London, or like spas in London, that have got fully stainless pools. They are obviously a very high end finish, and they're quite expensive to construct. We've installed a couple ourselves, and there's companies that obviously would do that manufacture for us, because there's a lot of welding, and it's a very on-site installation rather than something that we'd bring in prefabricated. We see quite often spas being stainless steel, so you can get that luxury feeling on a slightly smaller scale. Again, this comes down to a fashion movement, because the technology is now there that we can create a stainless steel pool. So with that, I imagine we'll see more and more of those. It's obviously just, you have to be very careful with any type of metal in swimming pools, that it's treated properly, because if it is damaged, or if the water quality is slightly out, then rusting is not the best look for a swimming pool.
No, absolutely. But the thing that I absolutely love about it is, it feels so clean. It's like the reflection and the way the water is against it. So when you're underwater looking at it. So I wondered then, as you say, it probably will become more popular anyway, maybe because it's sort of a fashionable thing. But also, I wonder, just for COVID and everything, where I think people's perceptions now are sort of heightened when it comes to materials and things that give you this sense that they're really clean and really sort of flawless, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's, I think swimming pools, by nature, the chlorine is actually a good sanitizer and has been proven that it kills the COVID virus. So that has obviously been quite a large selling point, if you like, or a plus point. We haven't used it as a sales purpose, but as a plus point for having a swimming pool in someone's home. And the stainless does give that effect. It's no cleaner than a tile, and it's obviously it's the water. If you've got a nice pool that you can feels fresh, then that's down to the sort of the design and the brightness of the tiles. Outdoor pools, obviously, the sunlight makes a huge difference to how that pool looks. So that pool would look very different on a cloudy day in November as it does in a nice sunny day in April. So it's the orientation and the location of that pool that works very well because of the stainless steel.
So going back to my dream pool, John, if I decide tomorrow I want a pool, how long is that going to take typically? From beginning to end, so I'm swimming, you've moved out, you've moved the building site, and I'm just enjoying my swimming pool.
The swimming pool itself, we generally say, would be somewhere in the 16 weeks as a minimum. So, again, going back to our trade association, we have strict curing times that we need to adhere to and construction times. So we will obviously... There's quite a few stages involved in building a swimming pool. And if you accumulate all of those construction and curing times together for a standard sort of size swimming pool, we're looking at somewhere around the 16 weeks.
And does that include like planning, if you need to get planning, or is that outside of it?
It very much depends. So for an outdoor swimming pool, it's my understanding you don't need planning permission, assuming that it hasn't got any buildings or... is obviously at ground level, but it's usually incorporated into more of a design for the garden. So it's very unusual for someone to simply dig a hole and plonk a pool in it and then grass back up to the pool. So it's usually, we're usually involved in much bigger projects, from a landscaping integration to a scheme, rather than just supplying a swimming pool. And we generally find ourselves getting quite involved in how that integrates, because it's the main focal point of that area.
So that's sort of post my landscaper or architect, I know what I'm going to do, I come to you, and then I'm roughly talking about 16 weeks.
Yeah, from your digger breaking ground to you having your first swim, we would sort of estimate 16 weeks, something like that.
Okay, super. And I suppose the million-dollar question, John, how much is it going to cost? What's the range?
I would say for an absolute ballpark minimum figure is somewhere in the sort of £45,000 to £65,000 for an outdoor pool without it. It's, as with everything, there's options. And it's the options that quite often increase the price quite significantly. So, I mean, an option that I consider to be almost invaluable would be a cover. So there's covers on the market that are simply for energy efficiency, and that's like a solar blanket cover, which is, you've probably seen, they're like a bubble wrap, which just roll up, and they're there to keep the condensation or keep the evaporation to a minimum, and you get some sort of solar gain, all the way up to automatic safety covers, which obviously cost more money, but they have a purpose if you've got small children or children of any size and animals and things that you're concerned about being around a swimming pool, then a safety cover is invaluable. And then with a safety cover and options and a heating system and things like that, then you could be talking in the sort of £80,000 to £100,000 region, assuming sort of a reasonable size swimming pool.
Okay, and so if that's the cost to install, then what would we be looking at to maintain that pool then over time?
I think the biggest cost is obviously heating the pool. Depending on how you intend to heat the pool, would be the next consideration. So a lot of people we're installing for a lot of people air source heat pumps, and they're a very good heating. If you're solely just heating the swimming pool water, we can get some very, very efficient units that when the weather's nice from spring through to end of summer, they're very efficient. If you wanted to swim all year round, then we'd be looking at maybe installing a traditional boiler type arrangement, so you can have that heat all year round. So if you're a keen swimmer and you want to swim on Christmas Eve, then we'd probably recommend a boiler, so you can actually have that pool warm all year round.
So if I'm going down the boiler route, how much would that cost, about a month, do you think, or a year?
I would say I've obviously standard sort of size pool. We sort of say between 8 meters by 4 meters, something like that. And you could be, if you wanted to keep it at a nice swimming temperature of sort of 26 degrees or something, that could cost you somewhere anywhere between £150 and £300 a month to heat. Obviously, depending on what fuel you're using and what sort of temperatures that you want. Some people like it very warm because they've got children that want to be able to jump in there, and we've got clients that are quite happy swimming in a cold pool because they find that invigorating in its own right.
I was going to ask you about that. Do some people just choose not to heat their outdoor pools?
So I think.
Do you think they're mad? You're saying it's a bit apprehensive there. Yes.
Yeah. No. Personally, you couldn't pay me to jump in a freezing cold pool, but it's we do have clients that quite regularly swim in. Obviously, we're London based, so they'll swim in Hampstead Heath and they enjoy that cold water swimming. Mm-hmm. We quite often will install a pool with. And they'll always have a heating system because if they've got kids and grandkids that want to use the pool, then they'll have the option to turn it up. But for them, they're quite happy swimming when it's cold. So they save the energy by not having the heating on. But not many kids will want to be swimming in a freezing cold pool, I don't think.
No.
I don't know. I used to go into the Atlantic a lot as a kid, and I wouldn't do it now for love nor money, but no. I had thicker skin back then, apparently.
But there's been one of the reasons I was curious to ask you about that was that I feel like there's been more talk about the health benefits of cold water swimming. And as you rightly pointed out, Hampstead Heath, I mean, the Lido I mentioned with the steel lining, that's not heated at all. Mm-hmm. But then also the Hampstead Heath ponds. And I'm not sure if you've seen the film that was made recently. I think it's just called The Ponds. And it's absolutely incredible, you know, the stories behind why people swim there every day.
Absolutely.
And what they gain from it. Yeah, so I just thought maybe
there's an awful lot of mental health benefits to cold water swimming.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got admiration for anyone that was happily go down to a freezing cold lake in the middle of winter and break the ice and jump in. I know people that do it, and they're much braver than I am.
We're all wusses. So along with the heating system, and like, I don't know, like, do you need like a pump room? Is there a lot of other space that you need to consider for, you know, the background to the pool? Because we always see the beautiful pool and the bit of decking beside it, but what's behind the scenes that we need to consider?
Yeah, so we do need a plant room of sorts. So obviously at the moment we're sort of talking more outdoor swimming pools, and there's a requirement for a a filter and a pump as a minimum. And that was normally housed in a shed or in the main property, because obviously you don't want that to be too impacted by frost and the elements. And then on an indoor pool, you've got the added consideration of having to control the environment itself. So there's a much more there's more space required for a plant room on an indoor swimming pool. Even though the filters and the pumps might not necessarily change too much, you've got to be able to control that the environment that the swimming pool's in. So that requires an air handling unit of some kind, obviously ductwork, to be able to distribute that air around the room to give that comfortable swimming experience. So we often see the plant rooms being the last thing that's considered, or certainly the least exciting from the client's point of view, because it's a potential shower or a toilet that they might have to lose out on, because obviously there has to be a space for that plant. But if I'm obviously talking to an architect and a designer, please give us as much space as possible for plant rooms would be my point here.
I was just going to ask, is there sort of a typical size, is it like 2 meters by 2 meters? Is that sort of sufficient? Or
yeah, so I think with an outdoor pool, we use sort of standard shed dimensions. So if you was to go anywhere and a 6x4 foot shed would be a sort of standard size for an outdoor plant room, depending on whether or not you've got boilers and things like that in there. But as a rule of thumb, and then indoors, it does depend on the size of the room, because the air hand unit is the largest piece of equipment that will be in that plant room, and the ductwork that connects it to the pool hall. So you've got two considerations. So the footprint for the pool plant won't really change. 2 square meters is sort of adequate for the majority of swimming pool plant rooms. But then you'll need probably that again, if not a little bit more, for the air hand unit alone. And the ductwork, depending on if it's going in the ceiling or around the floor, will need roots to be installed. And the sensible way of doing that is generally in the ceiling, where you can move it around in the void above the ceiling to distribute it to the areas of the room that you most want the air to go.
Mm. So, John, you mentioned architect or designer there. Do you do most of your work via architects or designers who contact you, or do you work mainly directly with the homeowner or the end customer?
The majority of our stuff is with architects, designers, or with a main contractor. Mm-hmm. So because of the swimming pool is generally a small part of a larger project, there's a lot of coordination and considerations for the rest of the building. So we'd be working alongside at least an architect who would sort of integrate that within the building itself. Obviously an outdoor pool, depending on the scale of the works, if it's a straightforward pool and a little patio around it, then that's the sort of thing that a swimming pool contractor would take on their own. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, if it goes further than that to sort of a full garden scheme, I'm a big believer that have people that specialise in certain areas rather than having one company that tries to do it all. Yeah. We specialise in swimming pools, so therefore we try and just stick to just the swimming pool as close as possible and let other trades do their specialist areas.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And John, we're starting to run out of time, I see, but a question that I really want to ask is, like we all know, obviously from the cost you mentioned, that installing a pool is a significant investment in terms of money, but does adding a pool actually add value to your home, would you say?
I think it does, because a lot of people would be put off by the upheaval and the potential sort of unknowns with actually installing a swimming pool in a property. So if there's already one there, I think a lot of people would actually be drawn towards that because they see the benefits without necessarily having to go through the actual construction process and that sort of initial outlay. So if a pool cost £100,000, I think people are more likely to pay an extra £100,000 for a house with a pool than save the hundred and then after they bought it, pay £100,000 for the pool, if that makes sense. I think it's certainly a big draw, especially in certain houses, they're expected. I think if you were building a big house in sort of central London now, a lot of people would expect some kind of leisure area, whether that's a sauna and a steam room or a swimming pool or both. It kind of comes with the sort of the area that you're purchasing in really. Mm-hmm. And then obviously I think the absolute highest of sort of swimming pool gadgets, if you like, is a moving floor.
Yes. And this sounds really high tech. How does that work?
So it's effectively the swimming pool is built as a traditional swimming pool, but it's a bit deeper than what you'd normally have. And then there's a platform that's built within that pool shell that can actually raise and lower to, firstly, it can alter the depth of the swimming pool. But secondly, if it's in its upright highest position, then it can actually be match the rest of the pool surround, so it can effectively make the swimming pool disappear.
Wow. So you could then have a little dance floor there or something.
Absolutely, yeah. So we've installed pools with moving floors, so a pool hall can be turned into a function suite. So especially if you've got a really, if you're tight for space, you can effectively double the usage of a space. We've done some in central London where the room is actually doubled up as a games room for kids to play football in. And you know, because you've got a solid platform, the swimming pool is 100% safe. You can turn off the keypad, so there's no possible way of anyone actually moving it. And then you can comfortably let people play in the swimming pool hall, play football. You know, it's a multi-purpose space in that respect.
That's absolutely incredible. Yeah,
it's a really cool gadget. We've put a couple outside, so people have had a patio area that you could have a barbecue on, and you wouldn't know that you were standing on top of a swimming pool. It's tiled to match the rest of the patio. And you'd never know there's a pool there.
Yeah, and so I feel like this is maybe a bit of a silly question, but is the water actually still in there?
It is, yes.
It is.
So we've got a couple of different systems that we install depending on the situation, but the same principle is on both, where the actual platform moves through the water column. Wow. So there's a little 8 mil or 5 mil gap around the outside of the pool, and that's where the water displaces from above the floor to below the floor. And then you could, at a push of a button, you can go from walking on the floor and as a patio to swimming a couple of minutes later in a 1.5 meter deep pool. So it's quite a cool thing.
Sounds like a James Bond style house there. That if really you've got is. One of those, that's when you know you've made it.
And it would be great for pulling practical jokes and things, because people could be sitting on their nice comfy and you push the button and next thing you know they're getting wet feet. So there's certainly some pranks that we've heard of that different clients have pulled.
You definitely need your waterproof outdoor furniture then, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Indeed. But John, that's been amazing. Thank you so much for all of those insights. I've learned so much, and I definitely now want the pool with the movable floor. That's right up on my list there.
As soon as you're ready, you know where I am.
Be in touch. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, John.
No problem. Thank you.
If you enjoyed our podcast, we would be delighted if you could rate, review and subscribe on your favourite podcast provider. This will help others who are seeking home and furnishing advice and inspiration discover the DNA of home interiors.
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter at the DNA of Home Interiors.
If you are looking for inspiration and help in designing your home interiors, take a look at Audrey Whelan's masterclasses on audreywhelan.com/events. And don't forget to check out youfurnish.com, a search and comparison website which helps connect people with amazing furniture from over 100 retailers. We designed it to solve the problem we and thousands like us faced furnishing our homes. And now we are really excited that everyone can search, discover, compare and shop for their home all in one place.
Thank you to our sponsor checkatrade.com for their support in bringing this episode to you. And most importantly, thank you all for listening today.
We hope you can join us next time.